your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
just
every
win.
Day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a raider. Pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What's up, Raider Nation? Welcome into Wednesday's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, April 7th, 2021. Your boy Q here with you as always. Of course, you can find me on Twitter at your boy Q254, as many of you do. And of course, you can also hit up that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line at 707-654-4693. Excited about today's show. Got a lot to get to, and I had a very, very busy Tuesday. I'm just going to let you get a little bit of that show or that day that I had on Tuesday. I was a guest on Vinny Bonsignor's show, Inside the Huddle, on Raider Nation Radio 920. It's always a pleasure to jump on with him and talk all things Raiders football. We also talked a little Baylor basketball, so you're going to hear that coming up in segment number two and segment number three. I also was on Cofield and Company early in the day, about 2:15 Pacific Standard Time. I was on for about 30-something minutes, and we hardly even touched on the Raiders, so that was another conversation, but I did that. I was on ESPN San Antonio on Tuesday, talking Baylor Bear basketball. Again, I mentioned it earlier in the week, man, with everything that Baylor had going on and winning the national championship, it's been a fun run as far as radio goes. I mean, man, Monday I was on Fox Sports in Arizona. I was on Fox Sports in Fresno, ESPN San Antonio, ESPN Las Vegas, Raider Nation Radio 920. I mean, it's been a lot of fun, man, just jumping on a bunch of different outlets, talking all things Baylor Bears. So that's been fun, but always talking Raiders is a lot of fun as well. So coming up in segment number two and three of today's show, you'll hear my conversation I had with Vinny Bonsignor, Inside the Huddle, Raider Nation Radio 920, talking all things Raiders. We talked defense, we talk draft, and we talk offense, Willie Snead, Kenyon Drake, and more. That's the conversation you'll hear in segment number two and segment number three. Here in segment number one, give you the news and the notes of the day, and depending on the timing of it, I may even be able to get to a couple calls straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. That is the goal, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. It's funny, on Monday, I did Mock Draft Monday, and I went over a bunch of different people's mock drafts and who they have the Raiders picking at number 17, and I had mentioned Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network that his was 2.0, and it was really old. It hadn't been updated since February, but I gave it to you anyway, and he had the Raiders taking Kwity Paye, the edge out of Michigan at that time. Well, of course, when you know it, on Tuesday, Daniel Jeremiah releases Mock Draft 3.0, so who he has the Raiders taking at number 17 now is not Kwity Paye. It is now Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, the linebacker out of Notre Dame. He says, new defensive coordinator Gus Bradley requires a lot of speed, athleticism, and coverability from his linebackers. Owusu-Koramoah gives you plenty of each. With Las Vegas signing Yannick Ngakoue to pair up with Max Crosby, I'm not as concerned about the Raiders' edge rush woes as I was before free agency. So that's an update on Daniel Jeremiah's Mock Draft 3.0, where he has the Raiders going at number 17. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, linebacker out of Notre Dame, is his pick right there. Also, something I mentioned on Tuesday was that Oregon had their pro day on Monday, and you heard from Javon Holland, the safety from Oregon. You heard that on Tuesday's show, and I mentioned I wanted to make sure you heard from offensive tackle Panay Sewell, and so I want to bring a few of his media session sound bites, at least the sound bites that were the most interesting to me. He's a guy that I don't expect to be there when the Raiders have an opportunity to pick in this upcoming draft. I think he'll be one of the first offensive tackles, if not the first offensive tackle off the board, but still, you never know what could happen, and we've talked about the Raiders getting aggressive and moving up, so who knows? Want to let you hear from Panay Sewell anyway, so here we go. Let's go ahead and jump right into that. So one of the first questions asked to him, matter of fact, it was the first question asked to him, was clearly from a Bay Area writer, and they asked about the Raiders and the 49ers. I think it was Zenny Abraham, but I'm not 100% sure. I think that's what they said. But either way, he was asked if he's talked to the Raiders or the 49ers. Pretty short answer for Panay Sewell here.
Yeah, I've been in contact with a little bit both teams, more towards the 49ers. The contact's been good. The conversations have been fun.
Now, I would say that I feel like the 49ers have a lot better chance of drafting him because they're picking at number three after they made that big trade, but we all know that they made that big trade to go and get a quarterback, so he's not going to be their pick, but interesting that he's talked to more of the 49ers than he has the Raiders, but he has talked to both teams. Now, another question posed to Panay Sewell was about his style. How does he like to play?
I like to play real physical. I like to use my body type to my advantage and to really get up in under people's chin and to really showcase my mentality also to go along with my physicality, that I'm coming off the ball every play with violent intentions and that nothing less is coming from there.
So there goes Penei Sewell, offensive tackle out of Oregon. Probably going to be the first offensive tackle taken off the board, in my opinion. He talked about playing with violent intentions. Of course, everyone likes to hear that if you're talking about an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. Hell, I like hearing that from a linebacker position, a safety position. I like to hear that from just about any position on the field, but especially in the trenches, man, offensive tackle and defensive line. So Sewell was asked to kind of expand on that. Talk about those violent intentions. What does he mean by that? Kind of where did he come up with that? Just expand on his style.
Going back to those violent intentions, the first time I ever heard that phrase was Coach Mirabal in the O-line room. So the once he introduced that phrase, it kind of stuck with me. Like, it never left. And that kind of carried out throughout my whole 2019 season once I heard that. And I think that's what I mean by going back to mentality, how I switched it. And coming off in between those lines, I turned that on. And I turned on that violent intentions every time, whether it's pass ball, run block, or even just everybody around me, or just like the environment itself, just coming along and knowing that my presence is there, and that if you line up across me, I want to let you know that it's going to be a long day.
So he's saying all the right things, man. He's got all the right answers. Of course, you love hearing about the violent intentions. You love hearing about the way that he plays when he steps on the field, and that it's going to be a long day. If you're a defensive player, if you're a defensive lineman going up against Sewell all day long, it's going to be a long day for you. You like to hear that. And again, another reason why, in my opinion, I believe he'll be the number one tackle taken off the board. But there's some that say he won't be. You know, there's other guys that have come into the conversation. Of course, I've talked a lot about Christian Darrisaw. There's a lot of conversation about Slater. There's a lot of conversation about Jenkins. And I know Jenkins and Sewell aren't in the same kind of the conversation. They're not in the same part of round one. But still, there's a lot of offensive tackles in this draft. And look, Penei Sewell opted out of 2020, so he hasn't played since 2019. You heard him talk about 2019. He hasn't played since 2019. So there's some that say he's not offensive tackle number one in this draft anymore after opting out in 2020. What does he say to those who are doubting him?
At the end of the day, that's their own opinion. But for me, man, again, just go put on the tape. Everybody just go ahead and watch what I do. And it's nobody can do what I do in this draft, in the offensive tackle rooms. So I bring something totally different to the table. And I think people notice that. People know that. But, again, people will say whatever they want to say. And all I have to say is put on the tape and watch me work.
So that's what Penei Sewell has to say to people that don't have him as the first offensive tackle off the board. And look, I talked about Daniel Jeremiah earlier, right? Well, his mock draft 3.0, he has the Carolina Panthers taking Rashawn Slater at number 8. So Northwestern offensive tackle would actually be the first one off the board. Then he has the Denver Broncos following up at number 9 taking Penei Sewell. So and they have him kicking him over to the right side and having a bookend with Garrett Bowles. So, I mean, it would be interesting. Clearly, he would have a chip on his shoulder if that was the case, if he wasn't the first one taken, but that's okay. That's what you want your players to do. Either way, he's going to be taken very highly in the draft. So the final soundbite I want you to hear from Penei Sewell is about what he learned or worked on while he was out of football in 2020. You know, where does he see that improvement from? Here's a pretty interesting answer from Penei Sewell.
Oh, I've learned so many different types of little techniques that come along with this game too. So I've gone with the NFL people, players that played before, or coaches in the league for a long time. So again, with them and kind of soaking up the knowledge that they have for me, it was just something that I really benefited from this time off. And so this whole time I've just been working on that, being a sponge, and also just every day in and day out, knowing that I opted out and sitting out through this time, that the next time I have an opportunity to step in between those lines, that I'm gonna make the most of it, and that I'm coming with everything that I have. And I'm not coming up short.
So there you go, Penei Sewell talking about things that he was working on while he was out of football in 2020. Obviously, didn't play for Oregon. He had opted out, as many players did, and you'll see that in the draft. And some of these guys will be affected by where they go to, where they drop to. But I don't think that Penei Sewell is going to drop a whole lot. But either way, it was good to hear that he was working on a lot of things. He was trying to soak up a lot of different techniques. He had got with some NFL guys and just taught or learned the tricks of the trade. So that's good, man. He's investing in himself while he wasn't on the football field. So it's not like he just took a year off and didn't do anything. So that's good to hear. So that's all I got for you for Penei Sewell and his media session following Pro Day on Monday from Oregon. I think I got time for maybe one text real quick before we get into segment number 2 and part 1 of my conversation with Vinny Bonsignor from Raider Nation Radio 920. And this text comes from Chef Nick from Denver. He says, Hey, Q, this is Chef Nick from Denver. Just listened to today's podcast, and you talked briefly on quarterbacks and how we should at least draft a few in the later rounds. I heard a fun fact today. In the last 20 years, there have been 15 number one overall quarterbacks taken. Eli Manning is the only one with Super Bowls, mainly due to some crazy catches and good defense. I think we always need a quality backup, but I'd love to see some major splashes each and every year on defense and in the offense. This team has gotten nowhere by playing it safe. Need more attempts like AB if we're going to make noise. I get it. It didn't work out, but one day it will. Love the show. Raiders. That's from Chef Nick from Denver, and thank you for that. And yeah, I mean, just because you grab a quarterback in the first round don't mean he's going to be a franchise guy and lead you to the promised land. You know, a lot of times that does not happen. There's a lot of quarterbacks that go in the first round that get traded. There's a lot of quarterbacks in the first round that are bust. There's a lot of bust rate in the draft in general. You're right, but I still think that at some point, you know, quarterbacks should be taken a little bit later on in the draft and just at least continue to get a cycle of those guys in there. And again, I'm going to do a show at one point about all the quarterbacks that the Patriots have taken or they took in the time that Tom Brady was their franchise quarterback. I think it will kind of blow your mind. And even though they obviously did not take over Tom Brady's spot, they just shows you that they kept dedicating themselves to that position, at least having a quality backup or someone who they felt was a quality backup. And about getting aggressive and taking chances like with AB, and it obviously didn't work out. You're right, though. That's something that we've been talking about quite a bit this week, is just being aggressive, you know, going out and making a big move, a splash, trying to get a difference maker, trying to get a guy to help put you over the top. AB, if he could have stayed right, could have been that guy for sure. Should have been that guy. Didn't work out, but the thought was right. Even though I didn't like it at first, the thought was right. You clearly see how big of a difference maker he could be when right, or when he's at least just, you know, doing what he's supposed to do for the sake of the team like he did in Tampa Bay. He just didn't do that, didn't have that same respect for the Raiders organization, so it didn't shake out. But yeah, I would have no problem with them making some moves. And look, you'll hear that in part one of my conversation with Vinny Bonsignor from the Las Vegas Review Journal and Raider Nation Radio 920 when we're talking about the draft and what the Raiders should do. He talks about number 17, but I flip it and take it to a whole nother direction. So you'll hear that coming up in segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Before I get into that, I do want to tell you about Built Bar. And of course, I've been telling you about Built Bar for many years at this point, man. A really good tasting protein bar. They got so many different flavors to choose from. I can't even just run them all down. They have a bunch of new ones. They got some OG flavors, and you can see them all at builtbar.com. And again, just check them out. They're 100% covered in chocolate. They're softer, easy to chew. They're great for the health conscious man or woman. They can help you lose or maintain weight while you're enjoying a delicious treat. The bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Great for the keto diet. Check them out today, builtbar.com. When you do buy a new box, go ahead and use the promo code LOCK15. You'll get 15% off your order just like that. That's LOCK15 for 15% off your order at builtbar.com. Segment number two is on the way.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we are. Segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Time to go inside the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor from Raider Nation Radio 920. I was a part of his show on Tuesday. It was a lot of fun jumping on with Vinny. It always is a lot of fun jumping on with Vinny. So here's part one of the conversation. He's live at the training facility, the Henderson facility, and you'll hear that on the intro, and then we get right into it, talk a little Baylor Bears, but then we talk, you know, draft, talk about the Raiders at 17, what I'd like to see them do if they don't go with the offensive tackle. Anyway, you'll hear Vinny intro it. Here it goes. Part one of my conversation with Vinny Bonsignor from Tuesday, Raider Nation Radio 920.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center. This is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Let's go right out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our good friend, Q Myers. You can follow him at your boy Q4. He's the host of UNR, 3 to 6 p.m. on Fox Sports Central Texas, AM 1330 and 93.9 FM. Q, I would imagine you're a fairly happy dude right about now after Baylor basically flexed his muscles on Gonzaga and everybody else and won the national championship. Congratulations to your Texas kids. and Baylor showing out last night.
Yeah, man, they really did. They were awesome. It was unbelievable. I didn't think that they were going to go out there and punch Gonzaga in the mouth like that, but they did. And they earned the national championship, the first in school history for the men's basketball team. It was amazing. Scott Drew's a heck of a coach. And I'll tell you, man, it's just been a lot of fun just seeing the joy around the city. I mean, it doesn't do anything for me except for make my shows easier. You just, you know, welcome to open up the phone lines and let it rip. But besides that, man, it's been a lot of fun just to see everyone excited about what Baylor was able to do.
Yeah, and I love teams that, not necessarily saving the best for last, but playing the best when it counts. And their performances in the semifinals and the finals were testament to that. They rose to the challenge, and championship teams do that. They always have another level to take it to when the situation warrants it, and the level of competition and stakes get higher. And that's exactly what they did, and that's why they're the champions. And on the flip side, you can make the case, the opposite case for Gonzaga. They struggled in the semifinals against an okay team that right. got hot at the right time in UCLA. And then when they needed to push it up even higher, they weren't able. It wasn't there. They didn't have it. They weren't capable of doing it. And that's usually what marks or differentiates the champions from the not champions, the runner-ups.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. So. Anyway, let's get back to the topic at hand, the Raiders. And one of the questions that I posed, Q, on Twitter was, if the Raiders don't go tackle or free safety with the 17th pick overall, and, you know, obviously those are the two glaring needs, because there really isn't an established starter or a distinct, somebody that you could say, this is the guy that's going to start at that position for the next 16 games. They just don't have that. At either of those positions. But if they don't go there in that direction at number 17, where would you like the Raiders to go?
I just really, honestly, Vinny, I want to see the Raiders go out and get a difference maker. You know what I mean? Like, you can go get an offensive tackle who you believe is a difference maker. We talked about Christian Darrisaw a week ago and how he could be a great bookend, or, you know, even a Tevin Jenkins could be a good bookend, Liam Eichenberg, any of those guys, they could be great bookends. But if that's not the direction you're going to go, and you don't feel like there's a safety at 17 that you need to go get, go get a guy who's going to make a difference. And I say this by saying, even if that means trading up a little bit for a guy that may be dropping in the draft, similar to what we saw from CeeDee Lamb a year ago when he dropped to 17 to the Raiders, to the Cowboys, which I never thought was going to happen. I thought there was no way that would happen, but it happened. So you never know how the draft's going to shake out. So even if you have to make a move and go forward and go and get maybe a Patrick Surtain if he's there at 12, you know, just or a J.C. Horn who's a difference maker, a big-time player. There's edge rushers that you can go get. I wouldn't mind them going and getting a guy like that if they felt that he was the dude at number 17. But I just really think that the Raiders need more difference makers on the squad, and they don't have enough yet. So I would like to see them go in that direction.
All right. So you mentioned the possibility of trading up. And at what point do you seriously consider moving up? When do you start getting your eye? Like, obviously, trends happen in a draft. And
right.
all of a sudden, you just get that feeling like, uh-oh, this dude's fallen, you know? And
right.
how far will he fall? And that, you know, perks up the interest. And all of a sudden, you start thinking as a team, should we move up to go get this guy? If you're in the general manager's chair, at what point do you seriously start considering that, and for who? At what point and for who?
You know,
I know you just mentioned some names, but
right.
tell me when you would start seriously considering moving some assets to go get those guys.
I think that really it starts when it comes to Patrick Surtain. It starts at number 10, because I think that the Cowboys really have their eye on him and would love to team him up with his college teammate that they grabbed a year ago in Trevon Diggs. I think that that's where they ideally want to go at 10. So if for some reason maybe they go with a Penei Sewell, maybe he drops to 10 and they go and get that guy to be one of their bookends for the future, then I start thinking like, wait a minute, hold on, this dude's not supposed to be past number 10. And that's when I kind of get on the horn and say, okay, okay, what's it going to take? Because I think that guy is a difference maker. And I know Trayvon Mullen's there. I know Damon Arnett's there. That's a lot of draft capital that you put in corners. I get it. But, again, you go and get the best player available if you have a chance to. And if he's available and a little bit later than you think that he's supposed to be on the board, why not go get an absolute stud who looks like he could be a shutdown corner? Then you have a guy to give Gus Bradley and say, okay, here's a cornerstone corner for years to come. We'll figure out the rest. We'll figure out Trayvon Mullen. We'll figure out Damon Arnett. But right now, this is your difference maker, your benchmark guy that you can get at that linebacker position. I think that that's one guy. I also think that Micah Parsons could be a guy. You know, I mean, I've seen some mock drafts where he drops to number 17. I would be shocked if that happens, but again, it's just me being shocked, and that doesn't mean anything. So, you know, if he starts dropping, he's at 13, he's at 14, why not make a move and go get that guy, a guy that you know can cover the tight end out of the, you know, from the slot, a guy that can cover the running back out of the backfield, a guy who could be a difference maker. You know, I'm very high on Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, but I realize that you have to know how to use him. I know he's kind of a, you know, a Isaiah Simmons type clone. So if you don't have a great plan for him, maybe you rather go with Parsons. And if Parsons is somewhat there and available around, you know, 12 or 13, maybe Mike Mayock and Gruden get together and say, hey, what should we do? This guy is a real attractive piece. Gus Bradley loves to have a real dynamic linebacker in his defense. Why not go get that guy? I mean, there's a couple options there. I wouldn't give up the farm, but I would start looking around number 10.
We're talking to your boy Q, Q Myers, and you can follow him, I should say, at your boy Q, 254. Okay, so let's say Patrick Surtain or your guy J.C. Horn from South Carolina.
Okay.
And obviously, both of those guys presumably are your day one starters at one of the cornerback positions. I would think that that would mean Damon Arnett being moved to a different position. Could you project Damon Arnett moving into the slot? Do you think that he's got that kind of skill set? Because now if he does, you've just really strengthened yourself, because we don't know who the slot cornerback is right now. And maybe he's the guy that profiles at that position. But I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing is, I don't know. I don't know what Damon Arnett's going to be, because we didn't get to see him on the field enough. You know, he was banged up, obviously, coming out of training camp, had concussions, so he wasn't able to play enough, and just didn't really know what you have in Damon Arnett. I think, and I know the Raiders were very high on him coming out of training camp. You talked about that many times, coming out of their practices, leaving the facilities. And so he could end up being a real deal player, you know, but at the same time, you just don't know. And so I much rather them have an abundance of talent. You know, you're coming up on year three of Trayvon Mullen. Is he the long-term solution? You know, let's talk about the other side. Maybe Damon Arnett is really the guy. And then all of a sudden you have him on one side and you have Surtain on the other side, and you think about Trayvon Mullen. I mean, you know, the contracts dictate some things, and he doesn't have a fifth-year option. He's a four-year guy, so he's going into year three. I think there's a lot of guys that have got to step their game up. I would love to see Damon Arnett work out in the slot, but I just don't know, you know, and it's only because we haven't got to see enough of him in general, the guy. How does Gus Bradley, envision him being a factor in his defense? You know, is he that guy or is he a guy? So, you know, I'm really interested in that, but I kind of like that philosophy of just going and getting a lot of talent. Daniel Jeremiah had broke this down the other day. He said, hey, in Baltimore, they just went and got a ton of talent. They drafted Terrell Suggs, I think, in the first round, and he wasn't even a starter, but he ended up being just about the defensive rookie of the year because he had so many sacks. He came in at certain times. They didn't worry about where they were going to play these guys. They just realized, this is the most talented dude on the board right here. Let's go get this guy. We'll figure out the rest later.
When I covered the Lakers and the NBA, you'd almost want to slam your head up against the wall sometimes talking to scouts, because you heard this dreaded, well, what position does he play? Well, you can't. And I'll tell you who it drove me the biggest up the wall on that. Was Gilbert Arenas. I covered him in high school.
Okay.
I knew what he was capable of. He was the same guy in high school that he was at Arizona that he became in the NBA. He was just a ball player. And there was, well, is he a one? Is he a two? Who cares? The dude is,
yep,
you know, unbelievably talented. And I think, you know, the NBA is starting to get out of that. Where do you play him? What do you do with them? You figure it out. That's what you do. The dude can play. That's the bottom line. And I'm with you on that. I think the more talent you accumulate, like the Baltimore Ravens have done, and then just let your coaches figure it out. It'll sort itself out. All right, you mentioned Micah Parsons. If he's there at number 7, it sounds like you'd be interested in possibly even moving up for him. But there are some issues, and that might mean that he falls to 17. Is he the guy at 17 for you if Michael Parsons does fall there?
Well, I mean, that depends. You know, I've been leaning heavily towards Christian Darrisaw, the offensive tackle out of Virginia Tech. I just think that he's going to be a big-time player, and I think he can man that right tackle position until the Raiders are ready to switch him over to the left tackle, which, based off of Colton Miller's contract extension, could be, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, and that's fine. Right. You know, that would be some really good bookends. But then again, if they believe in Tom Cable and believe that – you know, you can go get a tackle later on in the draft, then I would be all for going to get Micah Parsons. I do think that the linebacking position still needs to be addressed. I like the fact that Corey Littleton's going to have an opportunity in Gus Bradley's defense and not to be thinking so much, just go out there and play and be the guy that you remember when he was a member of the Rams and what we all thought he was going to be as a member of the Raiders that he just wasn't able to do because, well, he was just thinking too much, clearly. So, you know, I would love to see Micah Parsons. I would love to see Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. I just think those are difference makers that, you know, can go up against a Travis Kelce, can go up against a Noah Fant, can slow those guys down, you know, take out the running back out of the backfield. I know with Owusu-Koramoah, you got to have a plan. Like, that's the key. You've got to have a plan with him. But Micah Parsons, he could be a difference maker. He has a little edge to him. You mentioned he's got some issues. Yeah, he's got some issues and some edge. And you know what? I think the Raiders might need a little bit of issue and edge on their team as well. You know?
I agree with you. What about Kwity Paye?
I like him. I'm not 100% sold on him. I guess it's just the Michigan not succeeding as much as they should that has me a little hesitant on him. But he's an edge rusher. He could provide a lot of, you know, skill. But when you went and got Yannick Ngakoue, man, I feel really confident about him. I know Max Crosby's going to be a guy that's going to also get after the quarterback. So I don't feel like that's as much of a pressing need as it was, you know, a few months ago before they picked up Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So there was part one of my conversation with Vinny. Lots of good stuff right there. Talked a lot of defense. It was fun talking to Baylor Bears, man. It's been a lot of fun actually being able to talk on a bunch of different radio stations about the Baylor Bears. Lots of time when people hit me up, they're always talking Raiders, which is always great. But it's fun to talk about, you know, something else at other times as well, kind of show that versatility, especially there in Las Vegas since I'm trying to make moves. So anyway, want them to know that I got a lot more versatility than just the Raiders, but it's always great to talk Raiders. So coming up in segment number 3, part 2 of my conversation with Vinny Bonsignore from Raider Nation Radio Inside the Huddle. We're going to flip things and talk all things offense. That's coming up after I tell you about betonline.ag, and they are your online sportsbook experts. I know college basketball is over, but the NBA is going full throttle. NHL, Major League Baseball, I've been soaking in a lot of baseball each and every night. It's a lot of fun. I love the game of baseball. You can get your gamble on. You can get your bet on. You don't even have to bet the whole games. I mean, there's so many different lines and so many different bets that you can make. You can go 5 innings, 4 innings, the first 3 innings. You know, you can go bet on a certain pitcher as long as they're in the game. There's so many different things that you can do. The UFC always has a bunch of events you can get your bet on with. BetOnline.ag has you covered. Open up a free account today. And when you do so, if you use the promo code LOCKEDON, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus. So no matter what you put into your account, if it's 200, if it's 400, you're going to get 50% of that on top of your deposit that you could play with. So say you put $400 in, you'll get $200 extra dollars on top of that, $600 total dollars to play with. BetOnline.ag, promo code locked on. Get your gamble on, get your bet on, get off the sidelines, get into the action. The place that'll help you do that, BetOnline.ag. Segment number 3 and part 2 of my conversation with Vinny Bonsignore from Raider Nation Radio 920 is coming up next.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number 3 of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Time to jump into part 2 of my conversation I had with Vinny Bonsignore from Raider Nation Radio 920 Inside the Huddle on Tuesday. In part 1, you heard all things defense. Heard all things about the draft, what I would possibly do at 17. Heard a lot of good conversation. But now it's time to talk about the offensive side of the ball. And we're going to start off talking Willie Snead. He was a guest on Vinny's show on Monday. So he starts off talking about wide receiver Willie Snead.
All right, we had Willie Snead on yesterday, right?
And, okay.
One of the things that he mentioned was, and, you know, I could hear it in his voice. He loved playing in Baltimore, and he loved the edge. You know, he mentioned playing like a Raven. It was like from the top of the organization to the bottom of the organization, there was that mantra and kind of that image and that thought process and just that demeanor. And he molded himself into a Raven as a result. The toughness, the grittiness, you know, the fight in him. It kind of that's what personifies the Ravens. But reading between the lines, just hearing, you know, as he was explaining it, I think he really prefers now coming back to an offense with the Raiders that's a little bit more similar to what he experienced in New Orleans. And that's not to take anything away from Lamar Jackson or how they attack people. Everybody does it a little bit differently. Obviously, Lamar Jackson's skill set is different than, you know, Drew Brees. It's different than Derek Carr. So they do things a little bit differently offensively in Baltimore. And, you know, Willie was basically, you know, hey, I did what I was supposed to do. I was did what I was told to do, functioning in that kind of an offense. And it just sounds like he's really excited to get back to this type of an offense. And I went back and looked at his numbers. And I'm not saying this guy's going to be an all-pro player by any means, but go look at what he did in New Orleans, playing in that kind of the kind of offense that he was going to be, that he's going to be playing here with the Raiders. Are we sleeping a little bit on how good of a football player this guy can be alongside what John Gruden and the Raiders hope are a bunch of good football players on offense?
No, you know, I don't think we are, because I think that a lot of people are fired up about Willie Snead. I know I'm more fired up about Willie Snead than I am John Brown, and I'm not trying to slight John Brown. I think he's a good wide receiver, but I just think he's a good wide receiver. I think Willie Snead, and I'm hoping he brings a little of that Baltimore Raven attitude with him to the organization. I really would like to see that little grit and grind, but with the New Orleans play style. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he has an opportunity to be a real deal playmaker. He goes up and he'll fight for the 50-50 ball. He believes that he could score anytime he touches the ball. I think that he's ready. He's seen a guy like Nelson Aguilar go and put up big numbers and then go get a big contract from New England. I think he sees the opportunity and knows that John Gruden is an offensive guy, and he's going to let his quarterback sling it around. He saw the numbers Derek Carr put up and realizes, hey, maybe I could be a part of this equation that helps boost this team and get them over the top, and I could end up being a go-to guy for Derek Carr. And that's one thing we know, man. Derek Carr has found receivers that he is very comfortable with. You can go back to Michael Crabtree. He was very comfortable with him as a free agent. Nelly, clearly he was comfortable with him as a free agent. You know, Zay Jones, he's comfortable with. There's a lot of guys he's very comfortable with. I'm sure Willie Snead says, I have a lot of opportunity here if I go and put my best foot forward. And if he brings that Baltimore Raven attitude and approach to it, it could really be a good thing, because it's almost like that blue collar, that everyone's against us. You know, we got to have a chip on our shoulder, but then at the same time, we're going to go show out, and he's actually going to have an opportunity to catch some balls throughout the course of the game, and not all just be just run. Oh, there's a pass. You know, I mean, that's just, wide receivers don't really thrive in Baltimore, but that's what they have set up. That's the way they have it set up, and they're still winning games. So that's their process. I'm not here to talk bad about it, but I think wide receivers much rather be in a plan, in a offense where they feel like they could thrive as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're talking to our good friend Q Myers, because if you look at the New Orleans numbers, and I got them up right here, age 23 and 24, played 15 games in 2015, 15 games in 2016, 8 starts in 15, 4 starts in 16. But look at these numbers. Obviously playing in an ensemble cast,
right.
Didn't start all the time, but got on the field, obviously. 2015, 101 targets, 69 catches, 984 yards, 14.3 yards per catch. 3 touchdowns. 2016, 15 games, 4 starts, 104 targets, 72 receptions, 895, 12.4 yards per catch. Again, and this is what's really intriguing to me, is that obviously when you look at the Saints, that is an ensemble cast. It always has been. And you had a point guard type quarterback in Drew Brees who spread the ball around. I'm not saying that Derek Carr is Drew Brees, but he's similar in that point guard quarterback approach, seeing the mismatches, getting the ball to the mismatch. And I just think a guy like Willie Snead now back in this offense, along with John Brown, along with Henry Ruggs, along with Darren Waller, and now Kenyon Drake, I think there's going to be mismatches that a quarterback like Derek Carr can exploit.
I agree. And you know, the thing about it, and Derek Carr has said it before, where he'll line up at the line of scrimmage and he'll look and say, oh, we've got this. You'll see it. You'll see that mismatch that you're talking about at the line of scrimmage, and the quarterback himself will see it and say, this play is going to work. And we're good. That's what you'll hear. We're good. And then he'll go and make that play happen. I'm not saying that Willie Snead's going to have the same numbers that he had in New Orleans, but you know he's going to have those opportunities. And when you put up those kind of numbers without starting, you know, you're doing – you're doing some good things and they're getting you the ball. And I know the Raiders probably run the rock more than New Orleans does, but still, you know, you have a guy that has the capability of making plays. So I think that the opportunity is there for him. He mentioned in his opening presser, you know, hey, to get back to an offense that's something like I was in New Orleans is something I'm excited about. John Gruden's offense, I'm excited about it. Wide receivers want to go there and have an opportunity to thrive, similar to what Nelson Aguilar did just a year ago.
Sticking with offense, had a chat last night, the subject being Kenyon Drake. Yeah. And just to pass this along, and I want to get your thoughts on it, the Raiders really believe that there's some untapped potential in Kenyon Drake. And nothing against his stops he made along the way, but the Miami years, the quarterback situation sometimes was a little bit, Tannehill got hurt one year. There was some flux at quarterback last year. These last couple of years, he's been in an offense. Kyler Murray obviously is a really good young quarterback, but yeah. The offense was kind of a specific sort of an offense, a little bit different than what the Raiders do here in Las Vegas. But there's a belief here with the Raiders that there is untapped potential in ways that they're going to be able to utilize Kenyon Drake, being able to go fast and with him on the field because he can line up at wide receiver and line up at running back. You don't have to do the whole substitution thing. You can play up tempo with a guy like that. What are your expectations for a Kenyon Drake? I know there was some head scratching going on, but just hearing the vision that I'm hearing, I see the common sense in this move.
I'm excited by the move. I was excited by the move when they signed him. I look at Josh Jacobs and Drake and I say, that's running back 1A and 1B. I think that they can do a lot of things very similar to each other. I think they could be on the field at the same time. I think that there's no drop off when one's out of the game and the other one's in the game. But then for every reason that you just mentioned, I'm excited as well. I think that you could see Drake line up outside and receive the ball. And I know he hasn't had a bunch of numbers catching the ball as far as his career goes, but I believe he has the ability to do that. I remember at Alabama, when he was used in that role as well, and I just think that he has an opportunity. In Miami, that was kind of a, I don't want to say dumpster fire, but it was a mess there. And it's a gimmicky offense there in Arizona. And so it's different, like you mentioned. This, he's got an offensive line that we all expect is going to be probably in pretty good shape once they finish putting it together. He'll be able to run between the tackles. I mean, this dude can do a lot of things that Josh Jacobs can do. And if you can have those kind of running backs on the field at all times and, go up there and get the ugly yards, the 1 and 2 yards, pickups, or break one and get some big time yardage and just help out that offense in a major way. I think the sky's the limit, really. I really do, and I don't want to gas this guy up too much, but I liked Kenyon Drake coming out of Alabama. I really did. I hated when he got injured early on in his career, but I think that he's got an opportunity to really show some good things in Las Vegas. I think he has a great opportunity. I know he loves playing with Josh Jacobs. He's fired up about that. I think that's something too. I think that means something. These guys want to compliment each other, similar to what goes on at Alabama. So I think there's a big-time opportunity here for Drake, and there's just more weapons on the offense. And, Vinny, we've talked about it a few times. You don't slow down building up your offense. A lot of people say the offense is good enough, just concentrate on the defense. It's never good enough. You've got to continue to build, and get better each and every year and make this thing more lethal. The best defense sometime is a greater offense, and that's what the Raiders have an opportunity to do.
And not just getting better, and that's a great point, and being on that quest, but changing it up and yep. doing things differently, because there's a whole bunch of defensive coordinators right now, probably as we speak in some buildings, that are studying you and figuring out ways to stop you. And if you come back doing the same exact thing, then they got you. So it's always staying a step or two ahead of that posse. And that's the quest. That's what's the ongoing process here in the NFL, and I think the Raiders understand it. And I know John Gruden understands it, and I think he's got some tricks up his sleeve. He's already figuring out ways.
I'll say this as far as one of the tricks that could be up his sleeve. I think the time that he spent in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray might help as well if Marcus Mariota gets into the game as far as just a weapon on the field, because they run that zone read. They run that to perfection. Derek Carr is not a guy you're going to be worried about taking off and running. But if you got Marcus in the backfield and you got Drake in the backfield, you literally don't know who's going to get the rock. Either one of these guys could take off and be big-time weapons. I think that that's something to watch out for moving forward as well.
That's why we have Q Myers on the show, bringing insight and knowledge like that. Q, you know how I feel about you. So thank you so much for the insight and the analysis. Always appreciate it. We'll be in touch. That's for sure, man.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, man. Have fun at the facility there, man. Knock it down. Knock it out.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
So there it is. That was my conversation from Tuesday's show. Vinny Bonsignor, Raider Nation Radio 920, Inside the Huddle. It's always fun to catch up with those guys. Had a very busy day on Tuesday, like I mentioned. I was on Vinny's show. I was on Steve Cofield's show. I was on ESPN San Antonio. Did a whole lot of different interviews. And, oh, by the way, did my radio show as well for 3 hours on Fox Sports Central Texas. But that's how your boy gets down. I would have it no other way. So hopefully you enjoyed that conversation. Coming up a little bit later this week. Matter of fact, Friday, I talked about it on Tuesday's show, but on Friday, going to have Jay Stevens, the host of Locked On Buckeyes. He's going to join the show to talk all things Justin Fields, as he's become a conversation that we've had a lot here on the podcast. So I'm going to have him on Friday's show just talking about Justin Fields in general, maybe even get a little Damon Arnett conversation. That'll be on Friday. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll have more news and notes of the day. We'll have more calls and texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. Got a lot of good feedback coming that way on the voicemail line, so we'll have that. Plus, we'll have some more stuff to talk about, some more Raider stuff to talk about as far as the draft goes, as far as free agency, building this roster as they get prepared for the upcoming NFL draft. Less than 22 days away now? Man, it is going to be here before you know it. So that's all I got for you, Raider Nation. Appreciate you as always. Appreciate all the feedback. Make sure you stay safe out there. Do what you got to do. Take care of your family. Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Social distance. Whatever. Just stay safe, man. Do what you got to do. And most importantly, as always, just win, baby.